You can probably tell in your own life the validity of the topic today, demands to do. And if you were to write that expression with hyphens, demands hyphen to, T-O hyphen do, you might be able to notice this in your own life as those internal pressures and maybe some external pressures that are trying to drive you forward, almost as if there's a foot on the gas pedal. And there may be, in addition to that, a foot or maybe multiple feet on the brakes or the handbrake, or the vehicle itself could be in park or reverse or even in neutral. So I think these internal pressures are an obvious part of life and not necessarily a good thing all the time. We already understand that human activities involve a lot of things, a lot of growing. And just think of this, a seed is planted in a woman by a man, and then all kinds of growing goes on and on and on and on and on over that 9-month period. And our entire lives involve growing, not only on a physical level, but on an emotional, mental, and spiritual level, right on up to the last breath that we take. So a lot of human activity is related to this area of growing. Alongside of that, we do a lot of eating and drinking and consumption of other things. Not only food and beverages, but what we watch, what we think, what we talk about. So we've got a lot of talking. We move our bodies. We move energy. We think about this and we think about that. We try to learn and understand more and more about our environments and the processes of life. We do a lot of sleeping. We do a lot of creating. We do a lot of doing. Demands to do drive human activity in so many different directions. And that impulse is going on. We might be able to restrain it to a certain degree. And we do when we recognize that a particular direction is not that valuable to us, or we have fears, or we don't understand what to do, how to behave, how to act. And so there's a kind of a variation, if you will, in our speed of moving forward. Our progress is not like getting on an escalator or an elevator and going from where we are to where we want to be, zoom right up. That is not how life goes. We go fast, slow, fast, stop, rest, stop, fast, slow, all kinds of variations in it. These impulses, the demands to do, give us a sense of the directions to which we should be aiming our energetic impulses. Those impulses to be, capital B-E, to do, capital D-O, and to have, capital H-A-V-E. Just think of that. We're always trying to figure out what to be, what to do, and what to have, and the means to satisfy those impulses. Anytime we've got a desire, we've got a want, a should, a requirement, or pressure from outside or inside, every one of those things is a demand that we use our energy to be something or not be something. Don't be that way. Or to do something or not do something. And you've heard similar expressions like that. Do that. Do it right. If you're not going to do it perfectly, don't do it at all. Or don't do that. Don't do this. A lot of injunctions that we receive over the course of our lives, particularly as children, is about what not to do. And then there's a lot of pressure from advertising and from peer pressure from our families and so on that say to us, we need to have this, you know, get all A's, right? You want a report card filled with A's. You want everything to be filled with praise and approval of us. All kinds of things like that add pressure to our body-mind system until we respond specifically to it or we learn to ignore the pressures of those demands. They don't go away by us ignoring them, but we might be able to pretend they don't exist, or we might be able to distract ourselves. We might be able to run from them. We might even be able to fight them by being resistant to so many of those internal and external pressures. But I think it's this inability or unwillingness or both to listen and to respond to those demands to do that results in so much unhappiness for us individually and in our families, ill health, and struggle. Besides those internal creation of demands to do that come from us, maybe in alignment or out of alignment with our life's purposes, whatever they mean to us, but there are enormous requirements from family members, you know, to be in harmony with the family ethic that says everybody in our family does this or has this or is in this field of or profession, or this is how we behave, and this is what our religion says, and on and on and on. And those pressures coming from religious authorities of expectation that we should be perfect or suffer or whatever it happens to be, largely delivered by people who don't actually adhere to those rules that they're promoting to us, but nonetheless, we can experience that early in childhood and right on up to late in life, that we must live according to the rules of religious authorities. A lot of us have positive adults in our lives other than our own parents that have mentored us or been positive role models. Sometimes those adults are not positive or mentoring, and in fact can be scary people or abusive people. And then we can add in our educational system and teachers and their expectations of us. Unkindly, I can say that for a lot of teachers, what they want is obedient students that make no waves, that create no resistance, that offer no challenges to the teacher doing their daily job. Now, clearly there are many teachers who see life as different than that in the classroom, recognizing the dynamic of children and students learning at different rates and having different opinions and coming from different places, that is, places, different families, different educational levels, different motivation, different willingness to accept or not the teaching. That teacher is trying to expand the awareness of that child, and when that is occurring, that's a fantastic thing. And then the pressure from peers, some of it good, some of it not good, and all of those things teach us to do or not do all manners of things. So we've got this huge, huge inventory of demands to do. It's known by all of us that staying in balance is a natural and a consistent pattern that occurs not only in living things, but it occurs in what we would consider to be inanimate objects, water and pressure and other energy forms. All material objects and even non-material objects will move until they are in homeostasis. Now, that sounds kind of abstract to say that systems move toward homeostasis. However, human life is mostly about the what, the how, and the why we try to get back into balance the way we do. Imagine the scene unfolding in slow motion so you can see the various concepts here. We slip while we're walking so that our center of gravity is shifted dramatically. And we're unprepared for that shift. So what are we doing? What are we doing? We're going to make every possible attempt to get back into balance. Another way to say what has occurred to us is we could say, we have begun to lose our balance. you've heard this. That's how we would all describe and say, I lost my balance. If somebody were to slip on ice in the wintertime, we would say, well, I lost my balance. In order to regain our balance, though, in this slow motion scenario, we would flail our arms, we would move our feet, trying to recenter ourselves to try to shift our weight so as to put the center of gravity back in the center of our body's mass as compared to it being way outside of our center of mass. That scenario is completely understandable to you and me, and it would be completely understandable even to children if we were teaching them something about physics. What is not so well understood is that we have more than just a physical center of gravity around which we're always trying to balance. We have an emotional center of gravity. We have a mental center of gravity. We have a spiritual center of gravity. Similar to the physical, I lost my balance. We will try to compensate when we lose our emotional center of gravity, or our mental center of gravity, or our spiritual center of gravity. It will be these misunderstood and ineffective attempts to reestablish emotional, mental, and spiritual balance that are going to lead to so much pain in human lives and in human relationships. It's easy to regain physical balance, but when our beliefs about ourselves, others, life, and God become imbalanced, that's another story. Trying to take physical action to reestablish emotional, mental, or spiritual imbalance is kind of like trying to outrun an internalized shadow. And no matter how fast we run, no matter how much we do, no matter how hard we work, no matter how much we use other strategies, the best we can hope for is temporary relief from the anxiety or the discomfort of the imbalanced beliefs. I'm now convinced that we already know how to label the acts that imbalance human beings. We call it PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. But we don't quite get that all humans suffer from this condition, just in varying degrees. While we may say that we know the event that was the trauma, and that the compensations in thought, feeling, words, and actions that follow that one moment in time are what the post and what the stress disorder are, I think we're missing the boat. Trauma persists. It doesn't end as if and the way we believe by people. It is an event of energetic infection. It's like a virus inserted into a person's emotional heart and into their thinking apparatus, their mind, and into their spiritual connective tissue between them and their source of being. Trauma is a living disturbance within the field of the individual that eats away at the identity of that person and anyone else who gets near them. It's contagious. I call these living disturbances consciousness forms. Now, living disturbances is my phrase, but consciousness forms is not. That's a commonly understood idea that consciousness gets shaped, and it gets shaped into forms, therefore, consciousness-forms. And those things start to take on a life of their own. They seek to add energy. They attract more energy to themselves. They seek to grow stronger, more solid, and to create just like human beings. I think it's worthwhile for us to consider our families of origin and as many generations as we can to look at the levels of imbalance that we can deduce as being present in our families. Now, if you have any experience or interest in genealogy, which is a fantastic hobby on the one level and tremendously meaningful from a therapeutic standpoint on the other, is to be able to look at our parents You know, in a family tree sort of an arrangement, we talk in terms of birth and death and number of siblings and ages and that sort of thing. But if we could look at our family of origin through a filter now that says, what levels of imbalance, if any, and I'm certain there were plenty, existed in our mothers, in our fathers, in our maternal grandparents, in our paternal grandparents, and however many generations we could gather information about. And if we can't gather that information, we can use a teeny bit of imagination to recognize that if our grandparents or great-grandparents or great-great-grandparents were immigrants to this country, that they were ripped up by their roots from their homeland, probably in Europe or Asia or Africa, and now are transplanted in really harsh circumstances into the new world. Folks, that's trauma. That's trauma. If we have, and we do, imbalance in any area, physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual, attempts to compensate for those imbalances will be present. So if we've got an imbalance, we're going to have compensations. We're going to have flailing in one form or another, trying to get ourselves back into balance. And if you can see that in your family of origin, then you can pretty much get the idea that perhaps the infection that our parents or siblings were suffering from got passed to us, either knowingly or unknowingly, kindly or cruelly. If you think back, or if you're in a position to do this today, you can have family conversations and discover anecdotes, and those are going to shed light on the behaviors of our parents and siblings, our aunts and uncles, our grandparents, and other people important in our family of origin. And from there, we can see the patterns of behaviors that point directly at those imbalances. Then we can use those imbalances kind of like they were road signs. We can see how they point to the traumatic energy that infected them and how their infections infected us. Nobody is surprised at the possibility that a child being born to a mother with a particular condition, measles or mumps or depression or HIV or you name it, is going to impact that child-to-be. We're talking here about the energetic infection, these demands to do, which are attempts to compensate for the infection that we've experienced. If I said, when you feel hungry, you compensate by eating, you wouldn't think anything of that. You go, yeah, that's pretty obvious. When you feel tired, you compensate by resting. When you feel bored, you compensate by seeking excitement. When you're feeling afraid, you compensate by trying to feel safe. When you feel unloved, you compensate by trying to feel loved. When you feel exposed, you compensate by trying to hide. And you could write out a whole bunch of other, when you feel, dot, 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 you compensate by trying to, and then you could fill in a blank, and you would learn a huge amount about yourself. And I would add, and when you feel wrong hyphen bad, when you feel wrong bad, what do you do? This is the real problem. We are infected with a serious lie. Serious because it is so difficult to diagnose, because it is so common in people that it appears to be a normal condition of life. When somebody has got a cold or somebody has got a flu, we go, oh, there's a change in condition. It is obvious this is not normal. But what I'm describing is a serious condition, but it is so prevalent, we accept it as being life, and not that something is wrong. So what do we do? What do we all do? I think we've got a variety of choices, and we probably use them all. We jump back and forth between these actions, trying to mitigate our fear, our anxiety, our anger. We try to be so good. We try to control everything and everybody. We use anger and rejection on others before they can use it on us. We withdraw and don't do anything with our energies. We try to shut down. We get on the treadmill of doing, doing, doing like a crazed hamster, afraid to stop, because if we stop, then our feelings become too obvious for us to overlook. Then what? We can self-medicate. We can use substances and other activities besides work as a way to keep us from going out of control and out of balance entirely. We self-pity and we practice victimhood, selling ourselves and others on the legitimacy of our dysfunctional conditions. We vacillate between hope and despair. We beat ourselves up for having all of these conflicting urges as if we are the problem. We justify our pain as some sort of deserved punishment. That point of view is promoted and helped by religious people. But what we don't do is we don't stop and try to understand that we're suffering from an infection. We are infected with a consciousness form. I could call it not enoughness with a capital N and a capital E. I could call it wrong hyphen bad. The only, and you probably could call it by other names, but I think those two are very descriptive. The only way to heal a consciousness infection is to cleanse our consciousness. Just think, if we had a wound, or we scraped our knee as a child or even as an adult, or we cut our hand, we would cleanse the wound. Clean a consciousness. Clean the consciousness of the stuff that has been inserted into it by other people in our environment because they were infected, or given to us or grabbed hold of by our own thinking, misunderstanding, lower awareness when we were children, and we thought and bought into the idea that God was punitive, God was eager to judge and punish us, and everything, even remotely interesting, was a sin. And so it was so easy to commit a sin because everything was a sin. People who have promoted that idea gave us the infection. We can cleanse ourselves. We can cleanse our consciousness. Not by listening to other people so much, because that's how we got infected in the first place, but to recognize that the source of all healing is the same source that can help us cleanse our consciousness. And all those different behaviors that we use in order to get ourselves back into balance, some of them harsh, unkind, cruel to ourselves and others, denigration, sarcasm, anger, judgment, deceit, dishonesty, double dealings, on and on and on. All of that is our attempt to get back into balance. When we feel terrible about ourselves, our neighbors better look out. Our families have better look out, because we're going to do something with those toxic energies. When we overflow, they're going to experience it. And then we misunderstand and we think, oh, it's their fault. It's their fault. They deserved my yelling. They deserved my anger. They deserved my punishment. They deserve my mistreatment. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. We were doing that no matter how effective we are at judging it and justifying it, that We were doing it to get back into balance. And it only works temporarily. It's like a fix. Ask a heroin addict. The next time you have a heroin, is this going to satisfy your need? And they'd say, you betcha. Forever? No, not at all. And X amount of time later, they'll be right back where they were. It's the same thing when we compensate. When we listen to those demands to do, and we throw out lightning bolts that are negative energies, or we try to be so good, or so this, or so that, in an effort to create a sense of relief in ourselves, it is only a temporary fix. Cleansing our consciousness is the solution. And then the demands to do, which are inevitable in human life, can be considered from a place of balance. When we're listening to demands to do from a place of balance, now we're functioning at a much higher level than we were when we were in fear or anxiety or anger or hatred or bitterness. Seeing things, standing in the ground of love, is a whole different experience. From there, we can create at a much higher level. So what do? How do we cleanse our consciousness? It's very straightforward. In Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, Christ would suggest that these energies that we have become infected with, human consciousness has these wanting to satisfy our own individual needs, regardless of what anybody else needs, and the way to deal with it is to turn those energies over, hand them over to divine consciousness for healing. Let them go. Let them be recycled. It's a variation on this one fantastic point of view. Reach out in thought and word to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment. Ask for help. Ask for healing. Ask for cleansing. Ask for understanding. And as you listen to this prayer that I'm about to recite at the end of this talk, you will know that this is exactly what Christ has recommended in letter 8 of what we ought to be saying as a prayer to allow the consciousness of these words to penetrate us so as to increase our connection to the source of our being. That's the way we can heal ourselves. We can heal our consciousness, and then everything follows from that. Our minds will be healed. Our emotions will be healed. Our hearts will be healed. Our bodies will be healed. Our relationships will be healed. And then our experience of life and our ability to create will be so much better, so much more effective, so much more loving. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.